Hello everyone and welcome to this podcast, Pamucha on the Wings of Hope. Pamucha is a Swahili word which means together. And here we say, hope is our greatest currency and we would allow no one steal it from us. This weekly podcast is brought to you by your host, Abraham Mateta, also known as Mikoma A. Enjoy.
Greetings everyone and welcome to this podcast, Pamoja on the Wings of Hope. My name is Abraham Mateta or Mikoma A. Mikoma A is a name that I got in the trenches. One day we'll talk about where the trenches are. This podcast is about stories of hope and change. In this podcast, we will talk about people who have had to undergo serious tests and came out with testimonies. In this program, we will talk about people who have been in serious mess and came out with serious messages. For today, I will basically be introducing myself. But before I do that, I need to let you know that this program will be running weekly. And make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. So, I now move on to talk about myself. And my disadvantage in this regard is that I'm trying to unpack my 40 years of existence in less than 30 minutes. In that regard, I might emphasize on things that you may not be interested in and gloss over certain things that you may be interested in. If that happens, feel free to get in touch with me on my contact details that I will give you towards the end of this podcast. So, my identity documents state that I was actually born in Zimbabwe in a certain district called Hurungwe and in the chiefdom of Nematombo in Mateta village. So I am also reliably informed that before turning two, I suffered from an ailment which eventually led to my loss of sight. So I grew up for the greater part of my life being a person who is blind. I usually like to write on my website and social media platforms about my interesting and thought-provoking experiences under the title My Blind Life in a Sighted World. I can say losing sight at an early age was fortunate. Yes, fortunate in the sense that I didn't have to deal or struggle with the issues of acceptance of my condition. This was also coupled with the fact that although my parents tried various things to get me to have my sight back, I never faced any discrimination at home from my parents and siblings. My mother had something interesting to say concerning how I grew up, and her supposition was that I was a naughty child. Let's hear her speak through an interpreter.
I am Abraham Mateta's mother. I look after this child and I encourage fellow mothers with such children to look after such children and take them to school with love and dedication. These children can be difficult when they are young, but they just require patience because you would be naughty. He would be mischievous to the extent of climbing a tree and would find it difficult to calm down. As a parent, you have to show care and help climb down without hurling insults.
Although Fielda, my mother, and Clement, my father, were simple people with little education, they made a decision that I should get some education. In order for you to appreciate this, a little bit background will be important. My mother only went as far as standard 2, which could be equated to grade 4. She told me that at some point when she was growing up and when she had left school, she and her elder sister would go for work in the maize fields to get money to pay school fees for Uncle Johan, their younger brother, because they believed that boy children were the ones who should be educated and it was not important to educate girl children. My father, on the other hand, did not go far with school, although he might have gone slightly further than my mother. But one thing that I can say is when he was drunk, he used to sustain meaningful conversations in correct English. It's a shame that I have never spoken to him in English when he is sober. And he has fortunately or unfortunately quit alcohol. He says it's fortunate because he says it's one of the greatest things he has done. He's now 83. At the height of his career, my father was a foreman in the Department of Roads under the Ministry of Transport in Zimbabwe. The decision to send me to school and sending me to school was a real blessing, which gave me a breakthrough and helped me to go beyond where my siblings and others in my neighborhood could reach. However, it came with a huge emotional cost, especially to myself and my mother, because it meant that I had to go far from home because there was no school which could take care of blind learners near our home. Again, speaking through an interpreter, my mother.
During the first days, I was greatly worried when he was taken to school, and when seeing them off the bus stop, I would scream crying.
My first school was called Kokota School for the Blind, and it was based in Mashingo. I was there for one term and was transferred to another school, which was a bit nearer home, more precisely in the same province with my home area. It was called Jairus Jiri School for the Blind, and it was based in the town of Kadoma. When I was in grade 3, I was placed in what used to be called an integrated system of education. This is how the system worked. I would use the Jairus Jiri School for the Blind as a residential home and would go to learn at a school in the neighborhood, which was about 2 kilometers away. At that school, known as Kureza Government Primary School, I was learning with the sighted learners. This was the beginning of a useful social experience for me because I gained skills of making friends and understanding how to negotiate my differences while positively contributing to my community. During the time, I also became a poet and would do social commentary through poetry. When I was in grade 6, for example, I wrote under the guidance of one teacher called Mr. Mapepa, a poem on the experiences of persons with disabilities from childhood to adulthood. I recited the poem at a conference on disability and family planning, which had been organized by the National Association of Societies for the Care of the Handicapped, NASCO, and other players in health, disability and family planning. The poem was broadcast on both radio and television, and I almost became a celebrity. Hey. In grade 7, I also recited another poem encouraging cleanliness in the town. During those days, the town of Kadoma used to be a very dirty town. So there was a campaign that was organized by an organization called YMCA and the town council to encourage cleanliness. Speaking after reciting my poem, The mayor expressed perplexity at how a blind child like me had been able to vividly capture the filth of the town and come up with what the mayor thought were brilliant solutions. The mayor concluded his observations by indicating that it showed that the development of the town required that all people, regardless of their disabilities, should be included. I believe I was fortunate to be academically gifted, but I need to indicate that there was another issue which used to put pressure on me. We were always made to understand that our options were limited and that there are certain menial jobs which our sighted counterparts would take if push comes to shove, which we would not. I was also nurtured, both at home and at school, to never ever consider begging as an option. And this was also coupled with my sense of pride, which I had acquired at the early age.
Sweet life. Some say life is not a bed of roses. Granted, but it's also not a thicket of thorns and thistles. Others say life is what you make it. But here, we say life is sweeter when it is what we together make it. Sweet life.
After completing my primary school and passing with flying colors, I went for my secondary school in a different region called Matabeleland. I found myself learning at one of the best schools, not only in the region, but in the country. That school is called John Tallack Secondary School. It was being run by the Free Presbyterian Church of Scotland. At that school, I remember with pride the culture of the institution and how reading and passing were valued. However, I was now learning with children of affluent people, and this had somewhat an effect on me. Part of it was that it forced me to concentrate more on my books. But there was something that happened to me socially. Tea was provided every day by the school, but the drinking of tea was associated with low class. I quickly learned that whatever that meant, I had no business pretending that I would fit in the so-called high class. So, together with those who thought like me, who were very few, as well as day scholars who were called day boarders, I would drink my tea. I acquired for myself a big mug, which we nicknamed the God Forgive Me Cup. For those who are familiar with the writings of Thomas Hardy, Far From the Madding Crowd in particular, there's a character there who drinks beer in a big cup called the God Forgive Me Cup. So that's where I took it from. So up to now, you might want to know, dear listener, that I still love my tea. In fact, I consider tea my first girlfriend. One other advantage that came with me learning at John Tallack Secondary School was that I learned to speak Ndebele, which means I can speak three languages, and these are Shona, Ndebele, and English. And I'm in the process of learning Kiswahili, so wish me luck, guys.
Hello, my name is Shona Somaki, and I'm a lady from Harare, Zimbabwe. Let's continue to fly on the wings of hope with Abraham Mateta.
After completing my ordinary level and passing, I proceeded to the Midlands province at a school called Lower Gweru Adventist High School. And there I was to do 2 years of my advanced level of education. There I was taking history, divinity, and literature in English as subjects. I gained the nickname the Attorney General because I had shown tendencies of wanting to go and pursue legal studies and work in the legal profession. My schoolmates and members of the community, as well as the church, were very helpful in a way that I cannot even begin to quantify or qualify. During that time, I was a bit overwhelmed because for the first time, I found myself being the only blind learner in my stream. So it placed a lot of, you know, responsibility on my shoulders. Emotionally, I would just feel like I was representing a lot of blind people. So I was very careful with how I would do things. During those days, it's also interesting to note that technology was not as ubiquitous as it is now. So I relied on the assistance of my fellow learners, particularly to read. They would read for me books, and sometimes I would take notes. Other times I would record on cassette, especially novels, but in most cases I would just listen, and I had a lot of faith that I was grasping, and in the process I was also developing a somewhat reprographic memory, if you want. So even up to now, if I'm given very simple presentations, I can just do them off the cuff because of that skill that we got during our days where we lacked. I wrote my final exams with so much anticipation. And unfortunately, when results came in February, mine were missing. I had written my exams in Braille. I don't really know at what point did my scripts disappear in the system, but my story was like many other blind people who learned during my time. I count myself very fortunate because there would be extreme cases where the scripts would never be found and the people would never get any result. So I got mine in June when others had got theirs in February. At that time, people were already receiving admission letters from the university. I could not immediately find a place to study law. By that time, Zimbabwe had only one law school at the University of Zimbabwe. I was admitted to do Bachelor of Arts, therefore, and I was given religious studies, English and French. When I went to register at the French department, I was told by one of the lecturers that the way they were teaching French was so visual that it would be difficult for me to catch up. I was therefore given an option to try and get something else to do instead. I can now confidently confirm, having interacted with other blind people who have learned French at a university level, that there is nothing so visual about the learning of French that can make a blind learner fail to adequately master and grasp the language. However, due to reasons I will not bother you with, I never argued for a minute with the lecturer, for I also had zero interest in the learning of the subject. So I went and got 2 courses from the Department of Politics and Administrative Studies. I was glad there they welcomed me with 2 hands. Therefore, at first I was at university doing two courses in political science as well as English and religious studies. And I learned for close to 2 months. However, although I was actively participating in my lessons, I increasingly felt disinterested and started pushing for a change of program. And through another process whose description might require its own podcast, I finally succeeded and crossed over to the law school. I always meet some of those who I learnt with at the law school and those who have interacted with them. And I hear that they say I was a very intelligent student. One thing which some may not know, however, is that I was only as good because of those classmates of mine. I've always bragged that I had one of the most cooperating classes, especially when I was at the law school. I have seen discrimination in practice, but at the law school, I never suffered any such, not even for a second. My classmates were ready to read for me, take me to some places which we needed to go to, especially given that Harare by then had become difficult to navigate for a blind person, and they would also readily discuss with me various topics. My experience at the law school further sharpened my social skills and strengthened my belief in the power of humanity. Having obtained a Bachelor of Law honors degree, I applied for a job in the government of Zimbabwe, Ministry of Justice. I got shortlisted for an interview and subsequently got the job. Unfortunately, it had to take me 3 solid months before I was allowed to start the job. I have written about this elsewhere in the Routledge Handbook on Disability in Southern Africa, which was edited by Professor Tsitsi Chataika under the title My Blind Life in a Sighted World, A Security Guard Who Turned a Lawyer into an Activist. I think you might want to read that. It's a 2019 publication. Anyway, I started working in the government of Zimbabwe in January 2008 in the office of the Ombudsman or Public Protector. I worked there as a law officer, and my duties included carrying out research, listening to complaints, drafting communications with government departments, and basically reconciling the government and the governed, and averting possible litigation. In September 2009, I left my work in the government to join the civic society, going into full-time disability work and working with an organization called the Zimbabwe National League of the Blind. This is actually the oldest member organization of blind and partially sighted people in Zimbabwe, and it was registered in 1973. I worked at this organization for 5 years, overseeing and implementing a program which dealt with the inclusion of persons with disabilities in governance systems. What was enriching in my job was that I was working with persons with various forms of impairments, and not only blind and partially sighted people. I went into the civic society at a time when Zimbabwe was in the process of coming up with a new constitution. I did my part to encourage and mobilize persons with disabilities to participate in the consultative processes. I actually presented during the second All Stakeholders Conference on behalf of the group which looked at what had been put on disability. I know that those who know me know that the result we got is somewhat disappointing, but I have always encouraged that those in disability work in Zimbabwe, notwithstanding how badly the constitution has captured some of the issues, must make lemonade out of the lemon. In 2014, I got an Open Society Foundation scholarship and left for the United Kingdom to undertake studies in masters in European and international human rights law. I was focusing mainly on disability and the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. In England, I was pleasantly surprised how sharp I was, but I think it's because I never had to worry about shortage of reading material because everything was available on soft copy, and for those books that were not readily available, there was a transcription center at the University of Leeds where I was studying, which would make those books and articles readily accessible. I successfully completed my studies in 2015, and the major highlight was that I passed my dissertation with a distinction, and the overall degree class was a merit. After that, I decided to go back to Zimbabwe. Remember, I trained as a lawyer, but I had never gone into court to practice. This was due to other reasons that I will not worry you with. But in 2016, in May, that is 9 years after finishing at the law school, I got registered and joined private practice.
This is Reina, a registered lawyer in Kenya, based in Nairobi. Continue listening to Pamoja on the Wings of Hope with Abraham Matita.
I was taken on board at a law firm called Movingi and Mogadza, where I worked for close to 3 years. I did gain a lot of valuable experiences at that law firm, but my story of legal practice can form another podcast episode. However, suffice it to say that private practice for a person with a visual impairment like me in a country with an economy like Zimbabwe was not child's play. This was so because operating there was difficult. No one really deals with the cost of disability. There are no tax incentives for employers of persons with disabilities. And although the government provides some money for the payment of assistance in the public sector or in the civil service, there is no similar provision in the private sector. Therefore, when you get to work, you are expected to meet the target because this is private practice. People are looking for money. And you get the same remuneration with the rest of the people with your experience. Yet there is an extra cost that you incur. If you are a person like me in a country like Zimbabwe, you would obviously need an assistant, and unfortunately, I got such and I was responsible for taking care of that assistant. In 2017, I applied for the Mandela Washington Fellowship. I was successful, and in June, I went to Rutgers University in New Jersey, where I studied civic leadership for 6 weeks. There, I met some of the most wonderful people in my life. Some of the networks remain useful today. In addition to giving me the leadership and negotiating skills, the course also helped me to recalibrate my worth. In 2019, I moved to another law firm called MC Mukome Legal Practitioners, where I worked until early 2021. I still hold my practicing certificate under the same law firm. In 2020, as you may know, COVID-19 disrupted all normal activities, and I was so much scared that I would not make it. However, I was able to be sustained by disability consultancy work, and you know, I always want to remain grateful to those people who gave me disability consultancy work. Not to say I got it because there were corners that were cut, but just to say they would have chosen anyone else, but they were also able to recognize my capacity to handle that. Another thing that sustained me was I became more of a regular appearance in the Bayles Court. During that time, I think that was the only court that was working, the court for Bayles. So there was a point at which I became a regular feature there. You would find me almost on a daily basis saying, "My Lord, I pray that my client be granted bail with conditions as per the draft order." So that was how I was able to sustain myself during the COVID era. Towards the end of 2020, I saw a job advert by the African Union of the Blind, which was looking for a human rights and advocacy officer. I told myself that that was my kind of job, and I applied. I got shortlisted for an interview, and I had an interview online, which was a bit grueling. I was fried and roasted in the interview, but finally I got the job. I consequently moved to Kenya in March 2021. At the time of recording, I'm now 2 years here in Kenya. I've stayed here in Kenya for 2 years. And I'm actually recording here from my bedroom in Nairobi. And this bedroom doubles as my studio. The African Union of the Blind, not to be mistaken for the African Union, is an organization which was formed to champion the interests and rights of blind and partially sighted people in Africa. It is thus an intercontinental umbrella organization of organizations of blind and partially sighted people in Africa. The Zimbabwe National League of the Blind, which I talked about earlier on, which I was saying I worked for, is a member organization. Of course, when people mistake the African Union of the Blind for the African Union, it is understandable, because the organization was formed in 1987 through a resolution of the then OAU, which is now the AU, African Union. So the relationship is there. The organization has an observer status with the African Union. And people who work there in fact, the organization itself is a semi-consulate status with the Republic of Kenya. So people who work there are considered as diplomats. My work here includes assisting the organization with all issues to do with the rights, including the use of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities and the Africa Disability Protocol. I've also been involved in other things, which include being a member of the Zimbabwe Youth Council board for 2 terms. I was also a member of the Law Society of Zimbabwe Council. So I was a councillor there, where I also championed inclusivity, but also did other duties which councillors would do. I am currently secretary to the Lawyers with Disabilities Association Zimbabwe Trust, which is an organization that we founded to improve the working conditions of lawyers with disabilities, but also provide access to justice for persons with disabilities in general. I generally like music, and at some point I did a music project, a music album, but I wasn't able to market it because of lack of time. But if I get time again this year, or if the push continues in my mind, I'm looking forward to working on another project, and this time I think I will find a way of marketing it. I'm a Christian. I believe in the gospel of the cross. I believe that love makes the world a safer place. I also recall that my reading skills were perfected by reading Christian literature, which we would get from Christian organizations in the United States and the United Kingdom, such as the Lutheran Brain Workers, Christian Record, Torch Trust for the Blind. My hobbies also include reading, learning about current affairs, listening to podcasts, so I listen to others as well. I'm not a party freak, but I'm a sociable person notwithstanding. I like making new friends and discovering new areas of interest. I have a website where I blog in addition to this podcast, and it's abmateta.com, abmateta.com. My word of encouragement to everyone is that we are in this world for a purpose. Never kill your hope and live life to the fullest, so that you can fulfill your purpose for which you were put in this world. Be a good steward. Take care of the talents that you have, the environment, and the responsibilities placed upon you. I make a promise here that I will endeavor to bring great issues in this podcast. I know that there are some cases where great issues come from people who are thought to be small, and then such people are ignored. In this podcast, I promise to give a voice even to those people thought to be small but with great issues. You can get in touch with me via email, abmateta@abmateta.com, or via WhatsApp on +263 772 485 516. Follow me on Twitter at Abraham Mateta, abrahammateta, and facebook.com/abraham.mateta. That does it for this episode of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I know there are some voices that you might have wanted to hear, like my family, but don't worry, we will feature those voices maybe some other time. For today, I leave you listening to a track from that album that I was talking about. The album is called Project More Love, and the track is entitled Only Sugar in My Tea.
To me, so for you I will sing whenever you by my side. I always feel dignified, but I have nothing to give to you to make you understand the way I feel. How can I open my heart to you and make you know
Jolly. I really, really love you, Jolly. I love you, Jolly. I really, really love you, Jolly. And oceans may dry, even mountains and hills may fly, but never will I stop loving you. Never will I stop loving you. But I have nothing to show to you to make you understand the way I feel. How can I open my heart to you and let you know that my love is real? I love you, Jolly. I really, really love you, Jolly. I love you, Jolly. I really, really love you, Jolly. You is incomplete for me. You are the only sugar in my tea. Life without you is incomplete for me. You are the only sugar in my tea. But I have nothing to do for you to make you understand the way I feel. Let me open my heart to you and make you know that my love is real. I love you, Jolly. I really, really love you, Jolly. I love you, Jolly. I really, really love you, Jolly. Sunuka Asinda Shaya Chandinga Kupa Kuti Uone Kutindo Kuda Inini Apana Chandinga Ita Kuti Uzi Uone Kutindo Kuda Nokuda Iwe Mudiwa Nilo Kuda Iwe
I love you, Jolly. I really